Here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which Is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, founder of the Heartfelt Foundation, and other organizations dedicated to improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about MSIA.
It was only because I was unprepared to take the opportunity to make the most out of it. And so I sit around unpreparing myself, thinking how smart I am, and thinking I'm not going to have to do that. Except there's another thing that creeps in there. And maybe it doesn't creep in. Maybe it's coming running in on wild horses. Because someday you're going to be parents. And you're going to have youngsters like you who are going to look up to you. And I'll bet you dollars against donuts, and I'll hold the stakes in my mouth, that you'll want your youngsters to love you and look up to you and trust you and follow your guidance. Just the same way you do it to your folks, right? No, no, no. Then if you're not doing it to your parents the way you would want your children to do it to you, maybe you'd better change your point of view. You might just want to switch around and say, hey, Mom, hey, Dad. Without protecting my weakness, how about telling me if I'm really messing off? Some of the greatest growth that I personally had was when my enemies told me how I was really messing up my life, joyfully telling me, you're not going to get anywhere in life because you're a smart know-it-all. You got a smart answer for everything. And I looked at him and I thought, God, my friends never told me that, but what they're telling me is the truth. See, what I had done is what a lot of us do. We gather people around us with like mind, and we call them friends. Then we make a statement and get our friends to back us up. And if that statement's in error, we get our friends to back us up in error, and we think we're really wonderful and great because Harry thinks so too, and so does Mary, and so does George, and so does John. You mean you got five of them who's just as wrong as you are, and you think that that's going to make it right by ganging up with me or on me? Your friends, you should seek out in a very careful way. It's neat to have them love you, and it's nicer to have them like you. And it's great when they tell you if you step off what is really you. And if you see yourself sliding and your friend doesn't say, look, I think you could probably do better than that, you might want to look around for some different friends because believe me, they're not going to assist you in your life. They're going to help you right down the path to failure in terms of failure, not in terms of temporary setbacks where you didn't pass the examination and you got to review it and get it again. Those type of tests just reveal to us our unknowing. We're blessed when tests come our way. Most people say, I got to take the test. You go, oh, test. It's like, why? I don't know everything. You don't? What part don't you know? I don't know this and this and this and this. Study that. You mean if I study it, I can get it? Yeah. Well, I don't know it. I know if you knew it, you wouldn't have to study it and you wouldn't have to dread that. Don't let fear stop you. It's like say, oh, I don't understand mathematics. Well, I didn't either, and I ate it. And by running, I don't understand mathematics didn't get me to understand it. I just ran more of my junk at me. And to say, well, the teacher's dumb and crazy was what? Yeah, we all know what that was. I don't know if there's a word for it. But see, we get to that place where we have a tyranny of weakness. A tyranny of weakness. It's because, well, I can't see the board, so therefore I shouldn't have to do it. Get glasses, sit closer to the board, have them write larger. In other words, whatever they present you with that doesn't work, and that you can present to yourself that doesn't work, find ways to work it. When somebody says, that can't be done, just tell them you never read the book that said it couldn't be done. And go for it. Now, there's a place in here where you can become ridiculous by just saying, I don't believe everything or I don't believe anything. And that's called your experience. When you see somebody else run off over the street and a car hits, someone runs over, you can believe it might happen to you. You can go ahead and run that out there and say, well, I hadn't better cross the street with all these cars. So you can validate your life experience upon everybody's experience around you. But always remember that people are not going to have the same experience and the same uniqueness and the same quality and quantity of it. There's an interesting statement in the Bible that I'd like to just use at this point with you. And the story goes of some people that came to a man who owned a field, and they said, can we work in the field? He says, yes, go see the foreman down there, and he'll pay you a penny, I'll use that term, for the day's work. And they went down there. And others came in at noon, and they said, we need work, can we work in the field? He says, yes, I'll hire you, go down, tell the foreman to give you a penny for the rest of the day's work. And others came in 2 hours before quitting, and they said, we need work. He said, fine. Go down, tell the foreman that you'll work for the rest of the day for a penny. The rest of 2 hours. And they all agreed to this, and so they all went. And when they were out in the field, they were talking about it. And those who worked all day got 1 penny. And those who worked a half a day got 1 penny. And those who worked 2 hours got 1 penny. And they thought, gee, how unfair. So they all come back up to this master. They said, that's not fair. He says, what do you mean fair? When I talked to you and hired you at the beginning of the day for a penny, you were glad to have that. And that was my agreement and my relationship with you. Right? And they said, yes. And you that came in at noon, you agreed to work the rest of the day for that penny. And that was our agreement, wasn't it? And it was fair with you. And they said, yes. And you that came in and worked the last 2 hours, you agreed to do that for a penny, and that was fair with you, wasn't it? And they said, yes. He said, then why do you come to me and call me unfair? Because I treat you the way I treat you and the way you agreed to be treated. You're not any of you going to be treated equally. Get it out of your head right now. You're going to be treated by the way you agreed to be treated. And you're going to teach people how to treat you. So teach them to treat you with respect and loving you and cooperating with you. And teach them that you're willing to see the errors that are going to stop you, to have them pointed out. But don't let them not let you look at the error more closely to see if it's their opinion they're running instead of the truthfulness of the situation. You have a right to look. Now, you think I've been only talking to teenagers? I didn't think we had any stupid people here. Well, excluding myself, I should say. I like to address myself to you parents and you future parents and you people that love other people enough to assist them, which I hope would be everybody in this room. Don't let these youngsters victimize you and make you feel a victim of your child, because they won't do that that's necessary to make their life work. Do you get that? When they say, oh, I can't do it, I've got a headache. Or, oh, I can't do it because of this, or I can't do it because of that. Just tell them, that is precisely why you're going to do it, just because you have the headache. So you don't feel like they're running you up and down the walls and feel like, I don't know how to handle my kids. I feel like the victim. Well, look, you're the one teaching them how to do it to you. And if you don't want them to do that to you, then don't teach it to them that way. And don't pass the buck on them. There's no teenager in this room that's ahead of me, because I've had too much of my own life as a teenager. And there's no young kid from 0 up to 12 that's ahead of me, because it just isn't going to exist that way in my consciousness. I don't let them victimize me. I'm not their victim. I'm not my own victim. And if you're not going to be a victim to yourself, then you don't have to be it to anybody else. And that doesn't mean you have to be hard-boiled, hard-nosed, and just really mean and ornery. But you can just tell them on the level you find them, don't do that. And I'm not participating in your victimizing me. And you're going to have to change that. And when they come again at that same thing, and believe me, they will. How many times have they asked for the car and you said no and they got it? Well, how many times did we go to our folks and ask for the car and they said, not tonight, and we got it? Your kids are no dumber than you. And you aren't any smarter than your parents. Because all we're doing is passing the sins of the parents on to the children. Until we come down to that place of don't victimize your parents. Don't make them be the victim of your life. And don't be theirs. Far too often I've heard parents say, I've given up so much for you. It's like, good. Maybe, Mom, Dad, if you'd given up more, you'd appreciated me more. Duck! Because you're either going to get a knuckle in the mouth or a backhand across the head. And when they do that, just grab their hand and start dancing. Tell them to dance beautifully. Because your mom and dad also can take a joke because they got you. But remember, the joke's on them. And they pay for it. And you know something? They want to. And they'll say, don't take money from those people. Come to me. I'll give you the money. You come to me. I'll tell you. I'll clothe you. I'll let you drive my car. Don't you go drive their car. Isn't that strange behavior we've got? I tell my kid, no, go drive their car. Have them insure you. Feed you, clothe you. When you feel good, come on over and visit. Because nowadays, you don't get to see the teenagers that much anyway. Well, isn't that true? Gone, gone, gone. You come home. Hello, kids, I'm home. Now you hear his echo. So to make yourself feel worthwhile, you sit and worry about where they are and what they're doing. Maybe they're in a car wreck. Maybe they're in jail. What kind of a kid did you raise? Juvenile delinquent? Why not? My youngster's out there getting strong, testing these weaknesses to see where they're going to reveal themselves inside of him or her. And they're overcoming everything that comes in their way. Why not that? Why not my youngsters are smart enough and I've trained them thoroughly enough in life? And you say, wait, but I didn't. You didn't? You mean you really didn't take them aside and tell them what's going on out there in the world? Well, no, you see, because I got this hang-up. Wait a minute. That hang-up is your weakness that you're protecting, so you just get rid of it right now by going to your youngster and talking to them about that hang-up inside of you that you can't talk to them about. And they may say, oh, Dad, I learned that 5 years ago. Like, you mean I've been protecting my weakness for 5 years, and you've known it for 5 years? It's an awful, funny, strange feeling. I remember my mother going to tell my brother and I about life. I think I was in the 8th grade, and he was in the 9th, or I was in the 7th, and he was in the 8th. And we sit there and looked at her, and she says, I want to tell you about life. My brother looked at me, winked, and he goes, not me, I just sit there, look at my mother innocent, like, me? I don't know anything. Not only did I know it, I knew where it was at. And who was doing it and when. And where my name was on the list. And these youngsters today are no dumber than us. Except I thought my folks didn't know. And I found out my mother didn't. but my dad did. Then I realized that my dad was protecting my mother in his weakness about his boys. So my mom started to tell us. And my brother said, "Mom, let's sit down at the table." So we sit around the table, and he said, "We probably save you a lot of time." She said, "How much time?" I said, "Probably the rest of the day." She said, "Do you want to tell me about it?" I said, "I don't." And she looked at my brother, she said, "Do you want to tell me about it?" He says, "I'll tell you every one of them if you want to know." She says, "I don't want to know, but," he says, "yeah." She looked at me and I says, "Don't ask. You might as well have one who's innocent in this family." You know, after that day, my mother always looked at me a little funny. It was about a week later, my dad took me aside and said, "Who are they?" I said, "Everyone you've heard about, Dad. Everyone you've heard about, and a lot you haven't." He said, "Just like that?" And I said, "Sure, because if I tell you none, you're not going to believe that. And if I tell you all, you aren't going to believe that. And in between, you can worry. You go ahead and just run them all on your head." And he really got upset. I said, "Now, if I'd said no, nothing, then all these people that you've heard talking, you'd have to disbelieve them, and that'd ruin a lot of your working relationships." He said, "Yeah." I said, "Now, if I own up to all of them, that means I can do some when you hear about it. It's clear because I've already confessed them all, and you won't know when it happens, except for one thing. Parents know about their children. Now, they may not know intellectually, but they know someplace in their heart. And I had two parents that loved me no matter what. And that loving no matter what didn't stop me from getting dribbled around and being disciplined. You call it punishment. I'm being grounded. Well, I'd like to have been grounded. My dad always had me going in the air. But one good thing came out of all those years. I became a very fast runner. Well, I had to, because my dad and mother took after my brother and I. The first one they got, they beat. And they never got me first. So I had it figured out. He was larger, he was stronger. It would take more of their energy and more of their oomph to give him a good beating before they got to me. And when they got to me, when he got 40 whacks, I might just get 4. So I learned to run real fast. You know, that was the truth. It worked out that way. But then my father found out that I did that with my mother. And he had an equalizer. It's called a shaving strap. You know, the time you go. Those things can reach out 2 miles. And I don't know if it was the hit that hurt or the sound that hurt or that he had to do it that hurt. But after the second time he did that, he hit his razor strap. And he had a little plastic belt. And he couldn't find the razor strap, and off came the plastic belt. Now, you know, it's awful hard to take your belt off your dad's pants and hide them. Well, I say that because I worked at it. But the easiest thing to do was just to stand up beside of myself and say, "You don't have to worry about me. I'm not going to be a bad blotch on your name or the name of the community." I remember one night I went to go out someplace, and he said, "Son," he flipped me a dime. And I caught it, and I said, "What's that?" He says, "It's a dime." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, if you get in trouble, call the district attorney." I still have the dime. To this day, I still have it. Because I wasn't about to use it, because that meant I was in trouble. And I figure there's a lot of experiences in life that I can have without going through trouble experiences. And I watched other people go through trouble experiences, and I said, "Oh, I get that. Pouring hot burning oil on your face scars it. I don't have to do that. I get that wrecking your car around a telephone pole can hurt and maim people. I don't have to do that. So you can learn an awful lot by observing. By observing. But never damn somebody when they do something and call them a bad name or they're this or that, because you're going to have to eat at the same table before too long. You call somebody the alcoholic drunkard slob, and years from now they'll be pulling you out of the gutter. Because by that judgment you're judged. And you can't be judged until you've participated in the process. Your best thing is just to lead that life that wherever you walk, people say, God, I'm glad you were here. You've made my life richer. You've made my life fuller. And when we part, there's going to be a lot of tears in my eyes. Because I am going to miss you. But I rejoice in that I'm going to be missing you. That you meant so much to me in my life. That I placed such value on you and you fulfilled it. That I'm glad to cry about that. But don't stop because there'll be tears in my eyes. Keep going. Because otherwise I make you the victim of my emotions. And I destroy you, thinking I'm not. Keep going. But let's smile when we part. Then when we meet each other again, we can still smile. Because it'll just be old friends coming back around each other. And to see each other, and to get close again, to go through the tears in the eyes. But it's amazing how you can have tears in the eyes and joy in your heart if that love that is present there is the love of the Spirit, love of God and man. And take care of yourself so you can take care of others. But if you haven't taken care of yourself, that weakness won't help anybody. And don't hurt yourself, and don't hurt others. Don't hurt yourself means don't let that weakness live in you as a hurt. But have the wit to know that if you can't lift 5,000 pounds, don't get under it. Don't go into the fool like, I'm going to lift it because I'm weak and I can't lift it. It's like, yes, but what would you do after that? Nothing. Then that weakness is not a weakness, it's a foolishness. It's when you take the weakness and you make it strong, you say, gee, now I'm free and I can go. And I can use that energy that's now available to me and get higher and share it with people. The highest consciousness you'll be able to manifest on the planet here, out here in the world, is service. Not service the way you think service is defined, but service by the way it comes to you to be done. And if it means the car's got to be washed and garbage has got to be taken out and the bed made, do it. For that preparation there is preparation to serve in the world in terms of dealing with large sums of money and dealing with maybe administering a hospital or doctoring somebody's life or designing a building or building bridges or roads or pollution or whatever or feeding the world. But that service comes when you present your life and you put your body on the line. And that means you take your body and you go out with your body and you empty the garbage, you wash the car, you put gas in it. Whatever is necessary, put your body into it. Don't just put your imagination, nor just your emotions, or just your mind. But put that all in your body and start the body walking into the world. And keep your eyes open. And listen to everyone around you, because when you walk out in that world and you got a lot of love inside of you, and you go to walk in front of a car, the stranger will pull you back and say, oh, watch out, there's a car coming. And don't turn around and slug them in the mouth for protecting your weakness. But thank them for assisting you in your unawareness. It's when we are aware that that isn't working, that it's weak. When we're not aware of the weakness, it's not a weakness in it. It is just not yet the developed strength. And that all comes from the talents inside of you, that are inside of you, that are called forth to be worked in the world. And you can wish to play the piano until you sit and play it. It's a wish. And you can want to play the piano until you do it, it's still a want. And you say you're going to play the piano, but until you do it, it's still a gonna. And when you play the piano, you got your wish and your want and your gonna all completed. And that all takes place through your body. So take care of your body. That's where the Lord dwells inside of you, as you. And we can call it Christ, or we can call it anything we want to. But that's where it is. And if you start getting overweight and your body starts deteriorating, get out there and handle that. It says you've been protecting some weakness by not getting out there and participating. And no matter how you con yourself, you look in the mirror and there it is looking back at you saying, yeah, but you didn't fool me. Because see, I know I can see you. And you fool all the people in the world and all you fooled is nothing. Because you're there knowing it. And that knowledge, when followed into its completion, is truth, and that will free you. And you don't have to wait until you're 80 to do it. You start right this second. Because it's not being denied to anybody. You may be restricting it. Fine. But don't make the restriction bad. Just make it not a complete strength at this time. I'm sure glad I was here that night with you. I had a chance to be a lot of different places. And I chose this one. But in reality, it was the only choice available to me because I'm here. And thanks to all the mothers and fathers of these teenagers. And I'd say thanks to the teenagers, except I won't, because you already did it. And that was your thanks, that of doing it. Beirush Beishan.
John Rogers' closing words were Beirush Beishan, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.